Support for the Exponent Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who've trusted Manscaped with their exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code EXPLORMINATE at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Guys, you know you've made it big when Manscaped is actually willing to support your podcast like this. And honestly, I wasn't going to agree to this until I tried the products out and made sure that they were something that I felt comfortable advertising like this. But now that I've tried it, I cannot tell you how amazing these products are. They're extremely high quality. And after using them, I can attest to the fact that they are gentle on all of your body. I was also given their beard trimmer, and I can't tell you how nice my beard looks now. I am never going back to another product. And I'm not just saying that because these guys are supporting Exploraminate like this. They are just amazing products. I'm really impressed. And probably the best part is that these all are waterproof, which means you can do all of this in the shower and you don't leave a big mess. I love it. So Forex fans, get 20% off and free shipping with the code Exploraminate at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code EXPLORMINATE. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Exploraminate Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Exploraminate Podcast. I am your host, Rob, and joining me today is Jesse. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you're the only one. It's you and me, buddy. You ready for this?
I am so ready for this.
Good. I'm glad to hear that because we are going to talk a lot about Spellforce Conquest of EO, and we were supposed to have somebody here to moderate our enthusiasm, but unfortunately no one else could make it, so there might be a little bit more enthusiasm for this game than maybe it might be warranted. But, you know, we're going to try to also put on our like devil's advocate hats and try to think of some of the things that we believe could be improved. But yeah, this is going to be a Spellforce Conquest of EO discussion review, sort of, and of course, an opportunity to provide some constructive feedback and criticism. Before that, though, I'm going to go over some news items because there are quite a few. I mean, there's just so many things that are going on right now in the world of strategy and Forex games. Phantom Brigade, which is the like mech style, like time-based, turn-based strategy game. I don't even know how to describe it really. It's pretty wild. It's a unique game. It finally has a release date of February 28th of this year, which is just literally in a couple weeks. So expect us to have some coverage of that one. And of course, Spellforce Conquest of EO just came out just a few days ago at the time of this recording. So if you haven't already, check out our videos, check out our coverage. And Jesse put together a really awesome 10 tips. Not only did he put a 10 tips article together, but he allowed me to use that article for a video, both of which are doing extraordinarily well. So come on down and check them out. A lot of people are eager and frothing at the bit for some tips and guides for Spellforce. So if you're one of those people, come on down and check them out. And also a game called Songs of Silence, which appears to be a fantasy Forex game, was announced and it has an ETA of 2023. We are currently working on getting a developer interview with the group there. They're called the Cerberus Entertainment or something like that. But if you haven't already seen the screenshots, they're beautiful. They're like this, like, just very painted art style. I love it. It looks really good. And the description that we've been given sounds very much like a traditional Fantasy 4X with real-time battles. So I'm interested to see a Fantasy 4X game do real-time tactical battles with the like traditional 4X underlying strategic layer. So I'm excited. So we also have some updates on Revival Recolonization. Finally, they're coming out of their holiday stupor and starting to update that game. They said that we can expect early access soon. And RI History Untold has its second technical alpha, which kicks off on February 7th. So probably about the time you're hearing this. So if you haven't already, you can go to Aura's website and sign up for the technical alpha. And it sounds like they're going to let a lot of people in this time. So I'm not the only one that can be excited about this game. With that being said, I think that's pretty much it. The rest of the news items are kind of old at this point, but there's still a lot of stuff going on. If you're not already a subscriber to our subreddit, EXNN, as in Explorminate News Network, EXNN. Yeah, this is what it stands for. But if you want to go to www.reddit.com/r/EXNN and subscribe there, you'll get a nice little feed of, you know, relevant news that you guys are probably interested in. So I've knocked that out. Let's get into the game. So, Jesse, all right, you have an extraordinary, unbelievable amount of hours with this game. Where are you at now?
I actually was playing it just before hopped into the podcast, and so I just checked, and I'm at 327 hours with the game.
That's insane. Oh, man. All right, and something that Jesse's made really clear, and I think that it's really important to understand, is that, like, people will sign up or, like, volunteer for betas, right? And they'll do that with the intention of, like, playing it and providing feedback. But it doesn't always work out, right? Sometimes you just don't click with the game. And, you know, the feedback that you would provide would be probably like, hey, this doesn't really work for me and I don't really like it. And usually that doesn't really like constitute very good feedback. So this number here is exceptional, because when someone says they've been beta testing and playing a game for that many hours, that means it's definitely clicked with you. And I'm curious to know, like, what is it about Spellforce Conquest of Io that's really clicked with you, Jesse?
Well, so I knew almost nothing about Spellforce, the setting, before I played the game. Apparently, it's a series of real-time strategy RPG hybrids that have, you know, they made three of them. They haven't made one for a while. So other people who are more familiar with real-time strategy genre, you know, really enjoyed them. Apparently, they were really innovative. They just stopped making them after a while. So I knew none of this, since I'm not a real-time strategy guy. I did know that the game was owned by Gravity, who had made Fantasy General 2. And I have, you know, a generally positive opinion of it. I didn't think it was sort of like really stood out as being like one of the best games ever, but, you know, it was good. You know, it was enough to get excited. So I came in here completely blind, and what it did, and actually, like, one of the selling points that they have is that the game basically takes a lot of, like, the magic, the enjoyment, the excitement that you get out of the beginning of a 4X game and extends it over, like, the entire game. So, like, you know, that exploration, the discovery, the finding things, the, you know, trying to sort of, like, put things together based off of, you know, loot or treasure or special locations you find, and, you know, create some sort of strategy out of it. And they managed to extend that over, like, much of the game, which is not something I've seen tried before. And they pull it off very, very effectively.
Yeah, well said. I think that what I would suggest to anyone going into Spellforce Conquest of Io is to temper your expectations with regards to its 4X elements, because what I've seen is a lot of people going into this game expecting, like, a full-fledged 4X experience. And what I'm trying to help people understand is that this game is much more in common with, say, a game like Sorcerer King or Thea than it does, like, a traditional, like, a 4X game, like Fantasy 4X game, like Age of Wonders or Master of Magic. And That's because, I mean, if at its core, right, if we're going to talk about its core gameplay, the idea here is that you are like this up-and-coming mage, right? You are an upstart, and you are only given one mage's tower, and that mage's tower can move, but why does it move? Like, what's the importance of it moving? Well, all the resources that you will accumulate are all finite, and so you're constantly needing to move to find new resources, to fuel your armies, to buy your armies, and to, you know, to afford the upkeep and everything. So, and not only that, but you're going to want your knowledge for your research and to basically acquire more everything, right? Just everything. No matter what it is you're looking for in this game, it's finite, except for a few places. And when you need more of it, you need to move your Rage's Tower. And what Jesse's talking about with regards to the exploration phase is because you're constantly looking for the next place you're going to be, right? You're constantly looking for that next place that you're going to settle down and grab more resources and also further the story, because there's an underlying story, an underlying narrative for this game that, you know, is focused on the Circle of Mages. I don't want to talk too much about the Circle other than the fact that they are your main antagonist. And you will meet Circle Mages. You will have interactions with ones that are a little bit more easy to deal with. You'll have interactions that are really pretty negative, and they stay negative. And that part's pretty cool because a lot of it's actually somewhat random, right? The ones that are closer to you are going to be somewhat random. Some of them are always in the same spot from what I've seen. Others tend to move around a little bit. And the ones that are closest to you are going to really affect the way you play your game. But yeah, so this game, in a lot of ways, is 4X-ish, right? Because there is that overlying strategy layer where you are, you know, acquiring resources and managing those resources and selecting research and managing armies and stuff like that. But there's also this really strong RPG element and this really strong crafting element, and also these very quick but also tactically sound tactical battles. And so that doesn't sound maybe to the most people as a 4X game itself. And it really takes what I think are the best elements of a 4X game and kind of moves everything forward a little bit. And I know that's really kind of rubbing people the wrong way. Wouldn't you say that, Jesse? Like, a lot of people are like, you know, some people are going into this game either expecting it to be the next Spellforce, which, you know, the spell, like you said, the Spellforce series was an RTS series. So, you know, you're not going to get that here. This is a turn-based game. But also people are thinking like, well, this is an Age of Wonders. And I think that's pretty obvious with all the coverage and stuff like that. But wouldn't you say those are probably the two biggest complaints from people that haven't really spent too much time with this game?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I do think the developers are a little bit to blame themselves for that. You know, the page on Steam describes it as a 4X. And I think part of it is simply like, you know, they very much have what goes into 4X in mind when, you know, when they were designing it, when they're developing it. And, you know, they really wanted to sort of like interrogate the entire 4X genre, you know, and sort of like, you know, remix it and, you know, and push it forward in some interesting ways. And, you know, I do think that they pushed it outside of the 4X genre as a result of that, which is something that I think, you know, some people, as you mentioned, are reacting very negatively to. But like, you know, personally, I feel like it was both, you know, it worked out very well. And it was kind of needed, but, you know, I can still understand, you know, 4X traditionalists, you know, reacting to it in a little bit of a negative way because, you know, you are missing the expand X there, except for in a very sort of like parallel sort of way. Like it's near it, but it's clearly not intended to be, you know, you build cities, you expand territory sort of thing.
To kind of expand on what I was saying before, what Jesse's kind of mentioning and getting at here is that, you know, not only are you moving your mage's tower, but you're also going to be acquiring apprentices, and those apprentices can build lodges, which then expand your zone of control. And so a lot of times you're using those apprentices to expand your zone of control to a place where you can gobble up some gold or gobble up some mana or something like that. So there's this really fun, like, constant movement. Like, this is what I really like about this game. And I think this is what I really wanted to impress upon the audience, is that the momentum is always forward. Like, you can't slow down. You can't stop in Spellforce. You can a little bit. I shouldn't say that. You can slow down a little bit, but you always need to be expanding. You always need to be pushing out. You always need to be exploring, because if you don't, you're going to be dead in the water and you're going to slow down to a point where you do run out of gold, or maybe you're running a negative balance and you start, you know, losing units and stuff like that. And yeah, the hope is you're constantly just looking for resources. You're constantly looking for crafting materials or adamantium, which is something I won't get too much into, but there's these things that just, you just need to constantly be looking for. And I love this forward momentum, this, it doesn't feel like it ever bogs down because of it.
Yeah. And, you know, they lack, you know, as I mentioned, they sort of laxed a bit on the expand. You know, you're talking about, you know, the explore, the exploit, and the exterminate. But, you know, they really are very conscious of the fact that, you know, once you hit the late game, the expansion becomes a drag. It becomes something that sort of like, you know, forces, you know, into a lot of micromanagement, it slows you down. And a lot of 4X players just lose interest in the late game. And they're like, we need to stop that. We need to pull that out. We need to make it so it's fun. You know, and you get that same sort of like, you know, fun throughout the game. And they did very well with that. And I, you know, I'm very, very impressed with that.
Yeah, I have to agree. And, you know, to further that, you know, not only is expansion kind of like a slog, but like just the management of multiple cities, multiple colonies, multiple planets, whatever type of 4X game you're talking about, those become my least favorite aspect of a game. And it's been something I've written about on the site with what's called my I think it's called like the end game and its follies. And I wrote this maybe at almost the beginning of Exploraminate, and I've updated every few years to kind of like bring back this issue, because it's still an issue. And I truly believe that the end game is hamstrung in most 4X games because there is that late game management that gets kind of out of control. And this is something that I was actually really happy to see that someone's trying to address. But I'd mentioned this even 7 years ago, was that the exploration phase after, you know, maybe the early to mid game is completely gone in most 4X games. Whereas in this one, it's always there. It has to be always there. And, you know, there can be an argument, right? The devil's advocate hat that I asked, or that I was trying to talk about here earlier. And that the one caveat to this, or the caveat to this like excitement from exploration, is that the map is always the same. It's a fixed map. However, the points of interest are random. The quests are random. And there's also 5 different starting locations with 3 different mages. So there might be a fixed map, but there is some variability to what you'll see and where you'll see it and the things that you'll start off trying to overcome. And I think that's enough for now. And I think that as a base game for $23, we're talking about a $23 game here, you know, and it's still something that I've already put in 40 something hours in. I can't imagine that I won't put in another 40 or 50 hours before more content comes. And I'm someone who has, you know, kind of a limited scope of attention. And I also have a lot of games that I play, and I do a lot of things for the site. So the fact that I'll put in probably 100 hours on a $23 game is insane to me. And I still think that it's ripe for a lot of DLC content. I think that you could easily produce a DLC with a new mage type, you know, or expand the map and, you know, bring in some of the other races. Because from what I'm reading and what I'm seeing with the Spellforce universe, there's a lot more. There's much more than we're seeing here. And that excites me.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it as well. I've actually sent over a DLC wish list to the developers, because, you know, as I was playing, like as you mentioned, you know, I'd love to see an additional mage type. Like they have an enemy circle mage in the game, I think is how you pronounce it, and he's a demonologist. I'm like, that seems cool. You know, there's demonologists in Spellforce. I would love it if, you know, if they came up with, you know, a demonologist option. You know, there's hardly any elves, and, you know, I know some elves, you know, bring out some strong feelings in people, but it feels like, you know, they should be in the game. And, you know, there could be more apprentices, there could be more heroes. You know, as you mentioned, you know, it would be fantastic if they made the map bigger, or even made like an entirely different map. Like, you know, that would probably reduce some of the complaints about replayability a bit, even though, you know, I'm at, you know, almost 330 hours and I'm still playing it. So I think the game has plenty of replayability, but, you know, I feel like things like this would sort of give like really delicious, really fun options for people who have stuck with the game, while also, you know, sort of like opening it up, you know, more for people who, you know, are a little bit more hesitant to get into it.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of budget they're working with. And I know that the team is small, and you've actually gathered more of this information than I knew. But it sounds like this team is only about 10 people strong, and they've only been working on this game for a couple of years. But I hope to see instanced dungeons, like where some of these points of interest might leave you to a smaller, much smaller map, and those things are procedurally generated. And maybe you do like little dungeon romps and stuff like that where, you know, I mean, it's very kind of RPG fair stuff, but I think that would be cool. I think that's something you could get away with and, you know, it not be, you know, it not take away too much from what's already there, because that map, I guess, is like canon. So I know that you can't do too much with like randomization or procedural generation for that stuff. But if you did procedural generating dungeons or caves or even cities or stuff like that, where, you know, you do get to go into stuff like that and then explore those a little bit more, and those might be random, I think that would be a really cool way to expand on that. And maybe offer some of that procedural generation that people are asking for. Before I even get into the next subject, the next portion of this discussion, I want to say that, you know, for me, going into this game, not knowing what I was really expecting, because I saw the screenshots and it did look something like a 4X game, but I knew that it wasn't quite 4X because I'd been speaking to the developer and he was like, yeah, there's some 4X underpinnings, right? There is a 4X foundation, but we've tried to do some things different here. And so with that, I didn't know what I was getting into, and going into it with an open mind, I have just really been blown away by what this team has been able to create. And like Jesse said, I think that the level of creativity, the level of abstractness, outside the box thinking, that's probably what I should say. The level of outside the box thinking here is, it's just bar none, right? Like, I mean, there's no one else doing something. I mean, there's a few other developers that are doing stuff like this, that are trying to change things, that are maybe taking genres and flipping them on their head and saying, no, this doesn't work, so let's minimize it. And to that, I really applaud Owned by Gravity. I think what they've done here for the price, that's like, I'm just saying, very few games come out below $30, let alone $23. Very few games come out at below $50 nowadays. And some of the games are coming out at $70. I mean, I'd rather pay $70 for this game, Spellforce Conquest of Io, than I would pay the $70 that's being asked of me for Forspoken, which is the new Square Enix RPG. And I think everybody would probably, if they saw both games, because it seems like that one's actually been poorly received, whereas Spellforce has been relatively well received. And I'm hoping to see that rating on Steam go up, because right now I think it's like a 78, 79% on Steam. So without all that being said, I do want to offer some constructive criticism, because I have played it enough to start to see some of the things that annoy me. And I know, Jesse, maybe you, with some more experience, can counterpoint my frustrations, or maybe you can agree with them. But the first and foremost thing that really gets me is the crafting system, and not because I don't enjoy crafting. I think the crafting's fine. I actually really enjoy the discovery of new crafting items, especially when it's adamantium, right? I keep wanting to say that, but that's what it's called, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, I keep thinking that's a Marvel thing, but then I realize adamantium is actually real. So adamantium. So there's so many things that you can craft. There's just an insane amount of things you can craft. I don't even know what the number is. Do you?
I can actually check that, because there's achievements for each of them. So there are 116 artificer recipes. There are 50 potion recipes, and there are 20 necromancer recipes.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about close to 200 individual, like unique to mages recipes. And then you've got more with regards to other stuff that I don't want to talk about too much. And yeah, so there's just an insane amount of recipes. But what bogs me down with that whole recipe, or with the whole crafting system, is the need to remember things and also to have to individually do it every time. So let me put it this way. Let's say you go through the game and you discover that if you put in, let's say something really simple, you put in three items that provide life, and you get to, there's different thresholds. So you get, each time you reach a threshold in one of the three or four, I should say, one of the four different elemental types, you will create something. And if you maybe, you know, in this case, let's say we just reached three life. Three life will give you a glyph that provides you 10 additional health points for your unit. And that's great, right? So you might want to mass produce this, because honestly, that's a pretty easy glyph to create and it helps a lot of your units, especially for like your core stack. So, and especially at the beginning, right? So the problem is that I have with this game is that I learned this recipe, but then every time I go to make another glyph like that, I have to manually put the damn ingredients in there. Like, even though it's a right click, I get it. I can't just go over to the left where there's like this nice little screen or a nice little portion of the crafting screen that shows you what I've created before and like reminds me what thresholds I need to meet. I can't just click on one of those and it autofills what I need. I really want that.
Yeah, I think that would actually be much more difficult than it sounds, simply because of the fact that like almost everything in the game is an ingredient. So, you know, these potions you find, ingredients. These other glyphs you find, these weapons you find, ingredients. And so in order for it to be effective, you would have to be able to like set, hey, I don't want to use consumables. Hey, I don't want to use glyphs. But, you know, sometimes you do want to use glyphs. So I think that in order to effectively optimize that, or maybe, you know, like, do you want it to focus on like lower value, you know, dots or higher value dots? It feels like it would be a lot of effort to put that into place without actually a lot of benefit. Because, I mean, maybe you're playing differently, but, you know, I usually have like 2 or 3 crafting slots usually at once, maybe 4. And, you know, it usually takes me like, you know, 10, 20, 30 seconds in order to, you know, figure out what I want to do with the glyphs. And it doesn't seem time consuming enough in order for it to justify the amount of like effort that I think would go into making something like that.
Okay. How about this then? A template. Give me like the opportunity to make a few different templates so that like some of the stuff that I'm making more often, or I can just change, like I can have like 4 different templates and I can, you know, if I want to make 4 quick health runes or health glyphs, sorry, then I'll just push the button each time it drops, you know, the easiest, most insignificant ingredients in there. I don't know. You're right. I understand your point. And now that you, I appreciate the counterpoint because I do think that that's actually a legitimate counterpoint. I do wish that there is a way to make it a little bit easier though, because it does feel a little clunky, especially when I'm going back into that screen every couple turns and I'm having to, you know, I want to be like a glyph, like churning factory, because there's so many good glyphs, and the more stuff you get, the cooler things become. And there's some like legitimately extraordinarily strong glyphs as you get into mid game and late game. That's a legitimate counterpoint for sure. So yeah, I mean, that's my main bugbear at this point. I mean, I will also say that I'm not a huge fan of having to relearn all of these every time I go through. That kind of feels like a roguelite mechanic that I'm not a huge fan of. Like, if my progress for learning those particular recipes carried over from game to game, like it was something I meta, you know, like I would progress through in a meta way where I, you know, once I discovered it, it would always kind of transfer over to each game that I played after that. I think I'd appreciate that more too, because sometimes it does suck to, you know, have learned something or remember something and then like, oh man, how did I make that crazy something, whatever. You know, the point was made just the other day or today even on the Discord where someone was going through and they'd put together enough components that they found this like awesome sword. But unfortunately, at that point, they needed to make something else. So they had to make something else with that same items or with those same items. And then when they went to go back to make the sword, they couldn't remember it because they didn't actually create the sword. So they discovered it through their, you know, tinkering and experimentation, but then couldn't figure out what it is that they did to get back to that. So that kind of stuff, I feel like that's another quality of life thing that I really want to see fixed up a bit.
Yeah, I think they're aware of this because, you know, there's been various streamers and, you know, gamers who are on their Discord who have, you know, presented, you know, that they're not quite happy with sort of like the memory component of, you know, remembering discovered recipes or even like recipes that you have the resources to unlock. So I think this is something on their mind and is actually on their to-do list. And honestly, like whenever we run into some of these UI things, I'm sort of like, you know, sometimes there are things that I brought up to them and they were like, either like, you know, we don't have, you know, that's something we can't focus on now, or, you know, or some other reason, but there are definitely things that just completely passed me by. And I feel bad about this one in particular, because like, I am not a fan as a gamer of, you know, things that require you to remember, but like I played it so much that I wouldn't say I have like every recipe memorized, because I don't. But like, you know, I have like key ones and I sort of like really understand how the system fits together. So it doesn't even occur to me like, oh, it would be great to remember these things from game to game, because I always go in and I'm like, okay, you know, I have to do this and this and this. And I think it's kind of a, like a curse that you have. Like if you end up with, you know, playtesters who are very experienced with the game, they may end up missing some of these things that would be very useful for people early on.
Well, it's great to hear that they're working on that, because I think that's something, or at least aware of it, I should say. But the other things I have, like there's minor things. I wish there was a little bit more character development depth. I mean, I know that as they reach higher levels, there are skills that unlock that do kind of allow you to like hyper focus on unit strengths. And I think that's cool. I do wish that there was a little bit more to that. And I also wish that they leveled up more traditionally and that I didn't have to choose health upgrades and stuff like that. I wish that they would like gradually upgrade their health. But those are little things and little, like maybe they're just traditional things that I expect from leveling up characters that I just don't see here. I mean, like when you have a level 9 goblin that you just never really gotten the opportunity to raise their health with, but so they're still like at, you know, a 45 HP, but they've got all these awesome abilities. You know, my frustration is that they end up dying even when you try everything to make sure they don't, because they just have such little HP, you know, and they might be this like glass cannon at this point because they're able to, you know, like sever them and do all sorts of cool things. You know, there's a few new abilities, a few active abilities that become randomly available to you through these level ups that, you know, make them pretty strong, but then they're one-shotted by, you know, a tier 3 unit. So I wish there was some more to that. I wish that the units, I mean, you made a really good point, and it's actually helped me with my last playthrough in your tips guide, basically, that you said that you wanted to keep your starting goblins alive. And that goes for just not only the ones you get started with your mage, but the ones you start with your apprentices too, because they have this trait called the follower trait. And the follower trait means they don't cause any upkeep at all. And I honestly hadn't really noticed that until you put it in that tip guide, which is fantastic, by the way. I really think, I mean, you, Jesse, you knocked that out of the park. I would add some stuff now that I've been playing it more, but I think that that stuff that you've shown there is really awesome baseline, you know, like great knowledge for your baseline in your first playthrough. Because with that, I've realized that as long as I focus on keeping those guys alive, and I really didn't recruit too much outside of that group, that I had this like killer, these two killer stacks, and they hardly cost me anything, because eventually, yeah, I upgraded, like I put a couple tier 3 units or 2 tier units in both groups, and now I'm working towards tier 3 units. But I mean, they're not costing me any gold upkeep, so I'm like, you know, I'm surplus like 15 gold a turn right now, and I've got like 700 gold, and you know, that's even with trying to buy whatever the hell I want to, really. And I love it. I think it's a great tip because it really helped me keep my money woes under control. And I think that that's something that I also want to come back to with what I really like about this game, is that it feels like a balancing act constantly with where I want to keep my, how many armies I want to keep, how many units I want to keep, and being able to maintain them, because everything is finite. So you might grab this like awesome mine that produces 10 gold a turn. Well, I think the highest I've seen is 8. And you get these mines. Yeah, sure. You're like, great, I'm kicking ass. Like I've got this huge surplus, but then, you know, you run out of gold, which makes sense, right? Mines run out of gold. So then you're like, oh shit, well now I can't afford any of these tier 2, tier 3 units that I just got. And now my income is plummeting. And yeah. So what do I have to do? Well, I have to go find somewhere that's going to bring me more income and fight my way through it. And I really like that. It really challenges the player to, you know, like I said before, like it pushes you forward. It just constantly makes you need to, you know, almost play aggressively in some ways. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I appreciate as well. But I would like to note there's actually some tricks that you can start doing in the mid game that reduce your overall reliance on gold. There's, you know, either ways to sort of like generate it without, you know, some of this resource grind, or there's certain spells that you can get that will modify your units to make it so they're less expensive. There's even like a higher one that just like provides a massive amount of gold upkeep. It's kind of like another sort of like step in the overall interlocking systems that Spellforce has put together. So you have like sort of like this base like locus style of gameplay as you sort of like spread across the land and, you know, devour resources in order to sort of like fuel your rise to magical power. But, you know, the spells that you discover, the spell pages that you discover, because you're never gonna find the same set of spells from game to game. Like the spell pages are really gonna mix things up, and they unlock lots of really cool and really fun and really interesting ways that you can sort of like play with the game, you know, things that you can discover that, you know, allow you to exploit, you know, the system and the world around you, that really just ends up, you know, providing even an additional layer of satisfaction and discovery in the overall sort of like game structure.
Yeah. All right. So this is where I'm going to ask you to think for just a moment, because I have a feeling that like at some level you're clouded by the positivity you have for this game, and that's okay. I totally get it. Like sometimes we're just enamored with games to the point where we have a hard time really getting critical. But if you were, I mean, after your 300 hours, if you were to have like this list, so like maybe just give you, can I give you three? Can you give me three things that you would change or make better to improve your experience with Spellforce and maybe make the game just better in general, in your opinion? Because of course, this might be different from anybody else's opinion.
Yeah, so I do have like a number one that immediately jumps to my mind. And it was actually something that I, you know, I brought to the devs early on, and, you know, so they're aware of it, but they just, for whatever reason, they decided not to do anything about it. For a lot of the beta tests, it felt sort of like I was providing them like with a hose of comments and information. And, you know, sometimes they would say something, sometimes I would see like a cool change in a future update that addressed it. So I don't actually know what they're thinking about this, but the auto resolve is just atrocious. And, you know, like there are a lot of situations where it very incorrectly determines that you are going to, you know, have a like decisive defeat, and then, you know, you can roll through there and just, you know, get through unscathed with no losses. And, you know, I think part of it is just simply that programming an auto resolve is probably not easy. And you also don't want to like encourage players to skip fighting too much, but like if it was just like a little bit better, I think, you know, both players and myself personally would appreciate it, because there are some fights that like, so there's a scale, like it goes from anywhere from like decisive victory all the way to like decisive defeat, or maybe it's heroic defeat, I don't remember, but anyway, there's a scale, and like the one step below, it's sort of like, you know, hey, you might lose a unit, and I'm like, I know if I'm gonna play it, I'm not gonna lose a unit. I know if most people play it, they're probably not going to lose a unit, and it's not going to be interesting. Decisive defeats that you pull out, usually they're pretty interesting fights. I don't mind them making me play those, but making me play like these fights where, you know, they're saying, "Ooh, you might lose a unit." Like, just don't do that. Please don't make me do that. I it's not interesting. It's not fun. And, you know, if the system was just a little bit better, it would not, you know, I wouldn't need to. So that's my number one complaint, I think.
Can I just jump in real quick and just seriously mirror that sentiment? I mean, I find it very frustrating when it's not even remotely close. Like, yes, I get that maybe there's like a strength disparity that's just not there. Like, I realize that there's two things that might play into that with calculations, and that like sometimes you have a group that while decently leveled, you still have these like amazing glyphs, or, you know, you've acquired some skills that just really change the strength dynamic between two armies, and it's not even a contest, right? Like, I go into this, like you said, I have to play them because auto resolve says that it's going to be close, or that I might, you know, I might lose a unit, and I'm not about to lose a unit when I know damn well I wouldn't, right? And 90% of the time I play that battle and I don't lose anybody, right? And it's not even a close. It's not even like I was like, oh, I'm just so skilled and tactical, like tactically amazing. I just go in there and I do what I do, and I set up what I'm supposed to set up, and I win easily. And so I'm with you, because I think that really drags the game down. It slows it down a bit, because I'm having to play battles that I just don't want to. Honestly, I just don't want to. But the ones that are close, the ones that I have to fight because they're tough battles, and they do require, you know, me using every skill I have and using potions and utilizing the glyphs that I have, I'm all about. I love that. And I'll eat that up all day. But the ones that they really, yeah, that auto resolve needs some work for sure.
So for my number two, like, I don't think that most players will even ever detect this or come to this point. But like, you know, while I do think like the late game, like in the end game, is much better than I've seen in basically any other 4X. Once again, this is not a 4X, but, you know, these style of games, I do feel that like some of the challenge dissipates a little bit much later in the game. Like, you know, there's still, you know, some tough battles, you know, at legendary locations and such. But like, I feel that, you know, there's so many different ways that you can just exploit and build cool combos and punish the, you know, the AI in ways that they are not effective at responding to, that, you know, it just, you know, I still finish, I still have fun, but it could be a little sharper. It could be a little tougher. It could, you know, I'm playing it like, you know, next to or top difficulty all the time. So like, I think it just needs a little bit more there, but, you know, but by the same token though, I understand, you know, why, and they made some adjustments just before release. And, you know, it's much more important to get the early and mid game right than it is to get the end game right at release. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they come back and reexamine this, or particularly if, you know, other people have this feedback besides me. And then for a third one is a little bit tough, because I feel like those are like sort of like my two core issues. My third one is actually just a UI issue, and it comes back around to crafting again. And once you hit the mid and late game, you just end up with so much stuff. Like there's just, you know, piles and piles of different ingredients. And if I had some way to sort of like sort and, you know, restructure the inventory screen where I could just like look at what I, you know, try to find things I'm looking for. Like I could just put like, you know, three life dots, and it would show me anything that I have in my inventory that has three life, just so I could save time just, you know, trying to scan through all the components to find just the specific thing I need. I think that would be like a really good and useful quality of life adjustment, which would, you know, make the one part of crafting, I think, that is irritating, not so bad.
Right. So in the spirit of quality of life improvements too, I think that some sort of quest tracker for me would be great. Like just a menu where I could, I mean, there's, it's relatively well displayed on the overlying strategic map, and I appreciate that, but sometimes I don't remember exactly what I'm looking for, and I don't want to have to travel all the way back to that spot, because sometimes, I mean, legitimately, like you're just, you know, you're going off to find some sort of item, and there can be so many different quests on the strategic screen that I get them confused. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's like super, super pressing, but I feel like a quest menu or some sort of quest tracker would help me keep track of that. It's just something that would really help with the quality of life for me. And I know that there have been too many times where I have gone back to a starting, or like this, the quest starting spot, thinking that I may have completed it because I've done a bunch of, you know, I've gone to a bunch of points of interest, and I didn't realize that I didn't get whatever it was that I needed for that particular spot. So that kind of thing would help a lot. And I think that's it. I agree with you on the sorting mechanism for ingredients. It would be great to be able to just, you know, click on, you're like, oh, I just want two life items, especially towards the end, man, because Lord, you got so much stuff going. And I also wish that I could, with Catalyst, I just wish Catalyst, there's something clunky about having to like click over to one thing to get the Catalyst and then come back to all your ingredients that I'm not a big fan of. But yeah, I mean, just in general, I feel like the crafting menu needs to be sharpened and given some quality of life love. But I mean, I'm getting really picky with the game that I really have enjoyed so much already. And I believe that this game is a lot more polarizing than I thought it would be. I honestly thought that most people could go into this with a fresh set of eyes and be like, wow, okay, this game for what it is pretty damn good. But I have realized quickly that people go into games with expectations that aren't necessarily fair sometimes, and that a lot of people are doing that with this one in particular. But I think that that's their loss, really, because if you can go into Spellforce Conquest of Eo with no expectations, really, if you can just go into it knowing it's a strategy game and a turn-based strategy game one at that, because that's important for some reason. I mean, I understand why it's important, because every other Spellforce game is RTS. But if you go into it with the expectation of playing a turn-based strategy game that has some RPG elements and some 4X elements and leave it at that, I think most people could find the fun here. Especially as you get further along into the game. Because I think that the first couple hours are fun, for sure. But the depths of this game don't really start to make themselves known until you're about 2 or 3 hours into it. And you start to see how many different ingredients you can find, and how important workers are, and how important your money management is, and how important it is to establish good relations with these cities, and get their rooms, and upgrade your towers, and all, I mean, there's just so much, right? There's just so much more to this game than what it seems to be at the beginning. And that is where I think the true fun of this game starts.
Yeah, like I think this game has just like a truly huge decision space because of, you know, how the sort of the randomness is built in the game. Like, and it's not like, it's a very sort of like designed randomness with how it's sort of like put in the game. Like the game, like just really encourages, like theory crafting. It, you know, it creates like lots of sort of like cascading permutations of decision making, and the decisions you make early on like have such big impacts later on that I think it's just for someone who really can, you know, dig their teeth into a game and, you know, who really likes sort of like exploring its intricacies, like this is going to be a delight. Like there's so much to explore. And, you know, personally, since I'm pretty sure that outside of maybe the dev team, I'm the person with the most hours played in this game right now. I am just so excited for people to start, you know, getting deeper and deeper into the game so I can, you know, bounce ideas off of them and sort of like really understand like, you know, the perspectives that other people are bringing to this game. Cause I'm sure that there's things that I'm missing and that, you know, I'm going to be really excited to discover as people, you know, start to understand what's going on here and, you know, the depths that this game has.
Au contraire, my friend. Jan Wagner, the director here, says that you probably have the most hours in this game in the entire world right now.
Oh, really? Where did he say that?
We were discussing this. We were chatting privately, and he said to me that no one in the world has that many hours that he knows of. That all of the dev team are like in the couple hundred hours. You have surpassed that.
Well, I'm sure people will catch up with me eventually because, you know, there's some, you know, crazy people out there that I have mad respect for. So, you know, and honestly, like I feel that I'm sort of like a very experiential sort of gamer. Like I'm very much like, ooh, you know, let me ride through these games on vibes. I don't, you know, dive in and do some of the analysis that other people do. So I'm sure, you know, people will get to an equal or greater level of understanding without even equaling the number of hours I have. But, you know, people are going to get there and I'm excited for it because, you know, there's a lot I want to talk about with this game.
For sure. And, you know, my main concern really is that, like, first of all, I'm glad that they released it when they did, because I feel like they've capitalized on some of the Age of Wonders excitement. They've also just released in a kind of point where there's like a bit of a dearth for fantasy games. And I mean, I'm here for it. A lot of people are here for it. A lot of people in our community are here for it. I'm really excited to see that. But I am a little concerned about like future content going forward, because you have this juggernaut of Age of Wonders 4 coming. And that would be my only concern, because I know that there's sales considerations, there's business considerations to make. But man, you know, I would give anything to see this game succeed well enough to see further content, more mages, more components, more quests, you know, procedural maps for dungeons or stuff like that. Like I'm here. I'm my money is ready. My wallet is ready. I'm here to provide whatever coverage that needs to happen. I want to see more from this game, and I know I'm not the only one, because there are a bunch of YouTubers out there with like serious audiences that are just as excited about this and just about, you know, is excited about the future possibilities of not only this, like this game particularly, but like I guess the franchise, right? Like this Conquest of EO or whatever it is they're going to do, this maybe this like turn-based side project, side direction that the Spellforce universe goes. I want to see more of it. And, you know, the more I hear and more read about the universe itself, it's a really well fleshed out universe, and it really is pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to whatever comes next. I'm very excited for what's here already. I look forward to more time with the game. I want to actually finish a run. That'd be great. And I feel like the run that I'm on right now is the ticket. I might actually do it this time. I feel like everything's just working out to my favor. I'm winning big battles and my money is like on point. I almost want to knock on wood, because it seems to be working out for me. So maybe this will be the run and I'll be able to report back later in the next week or so that I've actually completed it. But hey, Jesse, thanks so much for being here, man. I really appreciate the willingness you've had to put so much time into this. I mean, really willingness, I think it's more obsession, but it's fine. I really appreciate your point of view and honestly for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it's definitely not an obsession. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it is, man. I have never in my whole life seen anyone like, I mean, it's fine. And I totally get it. Like there's games like that for me. I haven't had one in a while. Spellforce is close. I was on almost all night last night. I should have gone to bed at like 10 o'clock. I think I stayed up till like 3:30 playing it. I'm not even kidding. I've never done that. I don't remember the last time I did it. And, you know, the thing was, I had my headphones on, the music's really good. And I just, you know, as the next quest came in and the next thing came in and I was getting further than I'd ever been. I was starting to think, and I'm like, my money situation's good. I got a griffin and I started seeing new enemy types I've never seen. I was like, oh my God, I just got to keep playing. Yeah. And then before I knew it was way too damn late.
Well, I mean, if you have a griffin, you have to keep playing. Like, that's the rule. I know.
That is a rule. It has to be a rule. But thanks again, Jesse. I really appreciate you being here, man.
It's been a pleasure. And I really hope people, can see some of what I see in this game. I hope it sells well because I really, really want some DLC.
Yeah, I get it. Totally with you. I'd love to see more DLC. And I think the guys there are really good. Jan Wagner has been excellent. Like, he's been such a great person to get to know and to discuss this game with and just shoot the shit with. And, if he has anything to do with any of this, I feel like it's going to continue to be great. But just to see him be successful would be really awesome. So, and his team, of course. I know he's just one of 10, but he's been such a pleasure to deal with. I very rarely get the opportunity to deal with somebody that nice and great.
Yeah, and he's actually been, like, I've been really impressed by his willingness to reach out and communicate with fan creators at all levels. Like, he's done a ton of interviews. He's been, sat on people's streams. Like, he is clearly, passionate about the game as well as passionate about, the people who, are interested and enjoy strategy games. And I really appreciate the outreach and how much he's been willing to just be there for the community.
Absolutely. And with that, stay tuned for another interview with him. We're going to do a podcast interview. I'm going to have Jesse on with me and we're going to berate him. No, we're not. We're going to try to get everything out of him that we can. And also just talk about the design process and really honestly, I just want to know more about how you develop a game at that level in 2 years.
One last quick note before we sign off here. I implore you to consider going to manscaped.com and using code Explominate because, we've never had a sponsorship deal like this. I think it's amazing that we've kind of started to hit the radars of some of these companies like this. And this is the first time that I felt like I was comfortable doing this advertising stuff because A, the products are really, really good. They're way better than I expected, honestly. And B, these guys actually knew who we were. Like, they knew all about our podcast and they knew about 4X games and stuff. So I think it's really cool. And if you guys wouldn't mind just considering that offer and maybe just help support our podcast like that, I would be extraordinarily grateful. So please use code EXPLORMINATE at manscaped.com. That's code EXPLORMINATE. Just like this show, just like everything we do. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
This was Rob and Jesse for EXPLORMINATE. Until next time, keep exploring.